Happy Bitcoin Monday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. Today is Monday, July 13th, 1600 UTC. In Bitcoin time, that is block height 957877. Sats per dollar is 1,600. And the Bitcoin price is hovering around $62,500. Got a great show lined up for us today. Before we get started, as always, Dispatch is 100% funded by viewers like you. We have no ads or sponsors. It's just me and you guys. So thank you for supporting the show with your hard-earned Bitcoin. The largest zaps of last week, my chat with Seth. It was Mav21 zapped 10,000 sats. He said, great rip. PGS Design also zapped 10,000 sats. He said, let's go. Ride or Die Freak Pseudo Carlos zapped 10,000 sats. He said, magic internet money wins again. Bitter21 zapped 5,000 sats. He says, free samurai. Damn right. Johnny Stimulus zapped 10,000 sats. He said, great rip, guys. Oscar Maria Fountain zapped 5,000 sats. He said, very informative. Thank you. And following up on that list was Cruz. He zapped 2,100 sats. He said, rippers rip. Thank you guys for supporting the show. I know sats are hard-earned. I know bear markets are, it's hard out there. Money's tight. Can't support the show with your hard-earned sats. The second best way of supporting the show is sharing it with friends and family. Citadel Dispatch is available in all your favorite podcast apps. Take their phone, search Citadel Dispatch, press the subscribe button. They're just going to get hit with signal. They're going to have no idea what's coming. They're either going to hate you for it or love you for it. I'm banking on the latter. All relevant links are at CitadelDispatch.com. Okay, guys, great show lined up today. A little bit different, but also we've done similar in the past. I have two of my favorite Bitcoin artists. I think Bitcoin and culture is such an interesting, and freedom tech and culture is such an interesting mix. And two of my favorite artists are Madex and No Good Node. I've had Madex on in the past multiple times. No Good Node is the creator of the album art for Citadel Dispatch and the background that you often see when I do video shows. And he's just got some really awesome art. We got a bunch of great art of his at Bitcoin Park. Bitcoin Park is basically themed to Madex and No Good Node, if you couldn't tell. Anyway, we have Thomas here of No Good Node. How's it going, sir?
Hey, man. All good. Thanks for having me on. I'm really looking forward to this rip and really glad to be here.
Pleasure to have you. I don't know where to start. I think an interesting place to start is, I think it's kind of interesting to me, right? Because you and Madex are my favorite artists, but you guys have completely different styles. There's like not that much overlap except for maybe the lifestyle, but the actual art is almost fundamentally different. You kind of almost have this, you know, like this cypherpunk futuristic vibe that you go with. What is the origination of that? Like, what, how'd you get here?
Ooh, yeah, that depends on like, how far back do you want to go? You know, you want to go back to the famous line that illustrators have, which is, you know, I was always drawing when I was a kid. And what happened after that? Like, that's maybe a long story, but we can go there. I think it's could be important to see how I ended up here if you want to go there.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do that. I'm curious.
Okay. So yeah, I was, you know, always drawing when I was a kid. And that was just analog, pencil and paper. I had lots of fun. It was totally free. And at some point, my dad brought a computer, our first like family desktop. And then at some point, you get access to the internet. And then all these different worlds start to open up. And one of them was these art sharing platforms. And I decided like, hey, I can share my work now online. And it was a total adventure, I guess. I'd never done that before. There were these sites like Deviant Art. And before that, I think there was also a site called Elfwood, which was more fantasy based. And so I guess I did this early version of what's now, you know, Instagram and social media, where you just post your art and you see if people like your art or in your drawings. And yeah, there's just so much work on those platforms. And I felt that when I was a kid, I was already not able to keep up with the internet. And like a lot of kids have right now, you know, where there's social media pressure, it's almost impossible to keep positive self-image. And that happened to me when I was a kid. And it happened so badly that I basically stopped drawing. The internet made me stop drawing, actually. And then my interest turned to computers and gaming. And then if you hop forward a couple of years, I realized when I was in college, I was actually kind of good with computers and learning software and designing. And after college, I just knew I wanted to move forward with that and, you know, explore that more, get better at it. And I became actually a newspaper designer, which, you know, I did for 3 years, something like that, until I had enough of it. And then I became a graphic designer and I did lots of branding for events and infographics and all. Just that was kind of easy for me, easy to get projects, easy to work in that field, basically. And that was just fine until I moved to this new workspace in Amsterdam. And I met a lot of new people there, and they were all basically, they had their own style. They were passionate about their work and selective about projects they took on. And until that point, I was just doing branding work. So, you know, brand guides. There was nothing of me really in the work I was doing. And looking back now, I think that's because of that switch that I made. When I stopped drawing, I went looking for something easier, something that really wasn't, there was nothing of me in the work I was producing. And when I moved to that new studio, I realized, oh, hey, there's also a different way. You can, you know, get really comfortable with working your own style, working because you want to make certain pieces of work. You want to work in a certain style. And until then, there was always this comfortable distance between me and the work I was producing. And I wanted to change that. So I slowly realized that I had given up on this passion that I had when I was a kid, and I'd replaced it with something easier, something that had nothing of me in it. And so I slowly gravitated back towards drawing, to making personal work again. And I started to try and add illustrations to my graphic design work, which didn't really work because the illustrations didn't really fit the branding projects I was doing. So instead of that, I tried to live stream my process, since I didn't really have illustration projects yet. And I started posting on social media. And then the illustrations got noticed slowly, and I got offered my first illustration projects. And that was kind of like a weird switch, because now I was being asked to work in my style, in my illustration style, and instead of working within the brand guidelines that were there. And I realized brands were asking for me, like for what I made, and not to simply execute their orders, let's say, or their brand guidelines. So that was the switch to illustration, mostly. And then a couple of years later, I found out, like, I had become like a freelance illustrator. That was everything was going well, but I found I still had the same problem as I had before. I was drawing and I was doing all these projects, but I didn't really care about the projects I was drawing. And there were some really cool projects, but the subjects just didn't like always interest me or inspire me. And so I started to thinking about the next step, what I wanted to draw, and not what people asked me to draw, but what came from within, what I wanted to draw. And around that same time at the career switch that I made from graphic design to illustration, I got also interested in Bitcoin. That was like 2016 or 2017. And I didn't really act upon that interest until there was this Dutch podcast called Satoshi Radio, and they did this video series on how to set up your own node, like on a Raspberry Pi. That was 2020, 2021, something like that. And I saw that video and I participated and I ran a node, and something just clicked in my mind, and I was like, oh, this is the thing I should be drawing, you know, this is where my interests are, and I need to somehow combine this with my illustration work. And I thought, I need to draw how I experience Bitcoin, basically. And so that's how it started. I started making Bitcoin-inspired drawings, tried to set up a BTC Pay server to make this online shop and make it Bitcoin only, just because I thought it was fun, basically. And then I needed a name for that shop because I somehow wanted like a little bit of separation between me and the new artwork I was making. And that's when I came up with No Good, and it all just, you know, started from there. Bitcoin was the spark to do that. Yeah. And then the loop basically repeated, you know, start sharing your work on social media, doing more and more projects, you know, you get offered some projects, and then it slowly became my full-time work, like this side project totally out of control. Yeah, that's the really long story, I think. That makes sense.
That's fascinating. What was the introduction to Noster? I mean, that's where we met.
Yeah, I think I heard about Noster for the first time, I think when Jack Dorsey tweeted about it. And, you know, he had this fund, I think, where he like...
And he like sent 21 Bitcoin or something to Fiat.
Yeah. And then what I thought was really fun was that everybody had their MPUBs in their Twitter profiles at some point. And I was like, oh, this is... looks kind of cool. Let's just try it. And that's when I like totally moved over to Noster. And I had like a Twitter account of 1,000 followers. So it was really easy for me to just leave that and go somewhere else.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we met. That's where I noticed you. Okay. So I have an interesting question.
Yeah.
And then we'll proceed from there. I guess it's like, it's a little bit of a soft docs, but people can probably pay, they can tell by your voice. A lot of the people you draw are Asians, and you're not Asian.
No.
Why?
That's a tough one because it's kind of a funny story, but it's also just style. And I cannot really control the style. Like I cannot. Style is this thing that slowly emerges over the years that you draw a lot, and you cannot really help to draw that way. And I cannot really help to draw faces the way I draw them. And yes, there are Asian looking faces. I cannot
that. We have a big Japanese community on Noster, and I just kind of assumed you were Japanese.
No, I'm not. I'm just a Dutch guy. But it's actually kind of funny because, you know, when I was drawing as a kid, with pencil and paper, you don't have any of these tools that you know, you have when you draw digitally. So I was always drawing eyes, and then I drew one eye and I drew half of a nose and half of a mouth, because I couldn't draw symmetry yet. So I could draw one half and it looked cool, but then I had to draw the other half and it just sucked, you know, everything was wonky and out of position. And when I started drawing again in 2017, I was kind of scared to draw faces because I know I had like a bit of trauma there. And what I did was, okay, you know, I cannot draw the symmetry because I draw the eyes too realistically. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to draw circles. Eyes are just circles. Like that's all there is. And then I can focus on other stuff. You know, I can focus on drawing the rest of the body, drawing the rest of the face. It makes everything a lot easier. And then that became a style on its own. I still get requests these days from brands that have nothing to do with Bitcoin or are in this space that we're in, that ask me to draw like characters with little round circly eyes. And that was just an excuse for me to move past that, you know? And so I don't know, at some point I started drawing faces a little bit more detailed again, and this is just how I like to draw them. And there's definitely inspiration from Japan in my life. I've been to Japan 3 times. I watched a lot of Japanese movies when I was a kid. There's something about that culture that inspires me. A lot of my inspiration actually is, I have like Pinterest boards filled with pictures for references and things that inspire me. And a lot of it is Japanese and Korean street fashion. So fashion is a large inspiration for me. So yeah, there's definitely a link there, but it's not like I set up to draw Asian looking characters, I guess. I also have like a lot of pictures of hooligans, like just English football hooligans. And because I like the way they look kind of tough, and I like that. So Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to me. Yeah. Like, Tokyo has that cypherpunk vibe to it in a modern city. Their whole culture, there's a lot of overlap there with, you know, tech forward, futurism kind of aspect that I think your art often captures, whether there's people or not, right? I think only a subset of your art has people in it. And I think you actually do a really good job of capturing the vibe of what I think this movement means to a lot of us without any people in it, which is kind of is a very difficult thing to do. I mean, to make, for lack of a better terminology, like to make computers feel inspirational in art is like a, I mean, at the end of the day, they're inanimate objects, right?
Yeah. And also, like, you know, where inspiration comes from is a really difficult question. And, you know, like I said in that very long introduction that I hope was a little bit like made sense. When I decided I wanted to draw Bitcoin or how I experienced Bitcoin, I thought about it actually a lot. Like, what is it then? What do you like so much about this weird protocol, and what will you draw? And I realized, I think there's like this small group of people who really love the protocol, who love this cyberpunk idea, like they're really interested in privacy, decentralization, cryptography. And then that's like a small group. And then there's the outside world that totally does not care at all about any of that. They either think it's like a scam or it's used for, money laundering, that kind of stuff. And I find that, is it called discrepancy?
Yeah.
Like between those two worlds? Yeah. Very interesting. Like this idea that we have what Bitcoin is and the idea what the outside world has about what Bitcoin is. And to me, Bitcoin is like very punk rock. It's do-it-yourself. It's like taking control, taking responsibility. It's like tinkering with devices. It's this, especially then, it was this thing that works, but it barely works. You know, if you try to run a Lightning node or set one up, it just overheats because it needs to download and sync the entire blockchain and quits after 3 days and you have to start over again. And maybe now it's different, you know, maybe it's gotten better. You can buy like Umbrels and Start Nines probably.
It's a little bit better.
So it's better, but that's like the kind of world I wanted to draw. This fictional world where, you know, we all go to electronic shops and we buy this very niche specific hardware to make, I don't know, a Bitcoin node run or something like that. And that's also why a lot of my characters are, they look a little bit beaten up. They look a bit rough. They look, I don't know, how do you say, they look, to me, they're like the underdogs that everybody, like they think they're up to no good, you know, the protocol's no good. Everything's no good. So that's also where the name comes from.
Yeah, no, I love it. So, I mean, I don't remember if I reached out to you or if you reached out to me.
Nope, you reached out to me.
Yeah, there you go. So at least one of us remembers. But it turned out you were a ride or die freak. And I asked you, I needed help with the album art, and everything I've done with Dispatch has been like completely bootstrapped, and I've kind of just figured it out as I go along. Mm. And I think I like made my original album art, not in Microsoft Paint, but, you know, basically. And I needed some help with it. And you were awesome. I basically had to give you zero direction because you've already embodied we're already very like-minded individuals. So I was like, I just want it to bang and I want you to put your heart into it. And you did a really good job. But this is long-winded. Thomas sent me like the original draft for it. And I was like, this is fucking awesome. And I think I just immediately updated my podcast feed. And he's like, bro. This is just... Like, I just sat down and I drew this out by hand. This is a sketch. I'm not ready yet. And so then I had to remove it. And I was like, okay, take your time. You know, you have your own process. But I guess my question for you is that still how you do all of this? Does it all start by hand first?
Yeah, always. It's actually really important to have a decent sketch before I can move on to the rendering, to doing the line work of whatever illustrations I'm working on. Sometimes, you know, I think the sketch that I sent you was really, really rough.
It was great.
Really rough. Yeah, but for me, that was like the first draft of a sketch, because normally there's two or three rounds of sketching before I can move on. And everything is hand-drawn. It's drawn digitally on a Wacom Cintiq and on a computer, but it is hand-drawn. And it's just a blank canvas. And then when it's...
Oh, so that, say, when you send me what it looks like, it almost looks like a pencil sketch. That's on like a Wacom tablet?
Yeah, that's digital. Yeah, I don't do anything like on paper anymore. I just switched completely. But I guess it's different for like commissioned or client work, because the client already has like an idea of what they want usually.
Right.
In your case, not so much the case, you were just like...
No, I said go for it.
Which is really cool.
You're the artist,
Yeah, and that's a totally different approach, because then I have to come up with something, and then it actually requires more sketching, because that's just, you need to come up with ideas first. That part hasn't been taken care of yet. So that's usually a little bit, it takes a little bit more time, but it's also way more fun because you can just do whatever you want to do. That freedom is really cool to get. That's also why I was a listener of Citadel Dispatch for a long time, listened to a lot of your stuff. So for me, it was just an honor to, to draw something.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, the feeling's mutual. I am. So, I mean, on that note, I mean, it takes so much heart and actual hard work for you to ship this stuff. And you're obviously, as a lifestyle, I mean, you're on the intersect of like the bleeding edge of technology and a lifelong artist with a very distinct style. How do you think about... just frankly speaking, like something like GPT Image 2, where I just can feed like a bunch of your catalog in and be like, make me some fresh, no good style prints. Like, how do you think about that? Because that's a brave new world for intellectual property as an artist and technology and friction.
It is a brave new world, and everything is changing so fast with AI. The AI itself is changing so fast. It gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
You can just take all my work, just throw it in there and make endless spin-offs of it. But it's quite a complex question, because there's a lot of different aspects to it. The first one is, I would say, I'm well aware that as soon as I post something on the web, it can be taken, it can be copied, it can be just, you can do whatever with
it. It's like open source software.
Exactly. I can try to protect it, and I can like spend a lot of energy on that, but I'm not gonna, because I've just accepted it's the internet, and it's gonna, it's just gonna go everywhere, and people can do it. They can do with it what they like. The AI part is different, because it's just so much faster and so much better, and it can copy you. It's not just an image that you can take and
then it can iterate
somewhere
using your style. Yeah,
exactly. And I thought about that a lot, and like where I'm at right now, and this will change, and so that's like a disclaimer, what I'm going to say now might change. I think with AI growing so fast and getting so much better, it's no longer about the actual art, it's about the person behind it. And I don't think you can see art or illustration separate from the creator. So you can rip it off, you can make spin-offs, new stuff with AI that's really close to my work, but it's not my work. And I think it's important. That's why actually one of the reasons I really loved Noster is that I can, like with Blossom Service, I thought I could sign my work using one NPUP, and that NPUP covers everything. It covers the articles that I write, the work that I put out there. And somehow I think it would be really cool if you can track all the work back to me using an NPUP or using a cryptographically signed server like a Blossom server. I don't know if that's actually exactly how it works.
That is how it
but
works.
That's the idea that I have. It's no
a
longer...
Blossom server... hashes things so you know they haven't been changed, and then they sign, so then you have a authenticity trail basically.
Okay, so it's connected to my Noster account then.
Correct. Every Blossom upload is signed by the key that uploads it.
Okay. Because I have a Blossom server. Actually, Kiron set one up for me like way back when they, I think when it was Hazard, right? Who made them, who like invented the Blossom server.
Yeah, it was Hazard. The concept. He did it at Sovereign Engineering in Madeira, GG and Pablo's thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
it's basically the same exact thing we do for text notes. We're just now doing it for media. It's a super simple spec. And by the way, it's great that you run your own Blossom server. That gives you sovereignty in knowing that it'll be available and people can access the media. But if you use a third party Blossom server, you still have those same cryptographic guarantees. It's still hashed and signed by your own key.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I've run my own instance, but yeah, I know there's like Nostr clients and Nostr relays with Blossom servers built in.
I mean, the two big ones is Primal runs one and Nostr build runs one.
But yeah, to come back to that idea, like somehow I think the artist story and the background of the artist and knowing that. Yeah. Trusting the artist and knowing that something that you see comes from the artist, I think is getting way more important. Yeah, so I'm like, I don't like it when people take my entire catalog and put it in an AI and see what happens. But I know I cannot stop it. So
yeah,
I don't
want to
waste
any energy on it.
It
doesn't really matter what you think, right?
No, exactly. So I can like be like really mad about it, and then it will still happen, you know. So yeah, that sucks. But what you gonna do?
I mean, especially if you find success, if you find continued success, then they don't even have to do the upload. I mean, the big one that we saw was like the Ghiblification of everything.
Yeah.
Right? They weren't even uploading Ghibli movies and then being like, use this style. He was just so prolific that all they had to do was tell chat, be like, yo, make this in Ghibli style. Make this in No Good Notes style.
I know, it's
right?
insane.
And just boom, done.
And then
but
just,
I think... an interesting example because Ghibli actually fought back against it and I think might have like hit OpenAI with a cease and desist. So I'm not sure if you can still do it in GPT, but like the Chinese open source models don't care about cease and desist.
It doesn't matter. It's just going to happen. Like, okay, maybe you cannot do it with OpenAI, but then some open source model like still has...
But then also at the same time, like there was a bunch of people that were introduced to Ghibli for the first time off of that stuff. Like I was already into Ghibli. It's one of like our approved screen time things that we do with our children where we allow them to watch Ghibli movies or specific Ghibli movies. Some of them are a little bit dark.
Yeah.
Because it's high quality. But a lot of people got introduced to Ghibli that way. And I do not think that someone's going to hold at the same standard a AI created Ghibli movie versus an original, right? I think if anything, it champions the original in a big way because it's such a unique style, right?
Definitely, and I think that's also like why I don't really care so much about it. If you decide to do that, because I'm like, okay, so you can do that, and then what? Like, you think you're gonna like. Get very rich by like selling it or something. I don't know what the end goal here is, you know.
I'm not really
worried about it.
I mean, I think this is a good moment to go into this book you created that I have in front of me, because it's a couple of things, right? Which is, first of all, as our world has become increasingly digital. Like society has never been as digital as it is today. And it is ironic because a lot of the passion behind your art is about society becoming increasingly digital. But there's a desire by people, I think, to have physical things again. You want physical things. So obviously this is a physical book. It's a bound book that is, how many pages? It's like 300 pages.
272 pages, to be exact.
272 pages. Yes. And then it's also limited edition, right? Each one is individually signed. It's numbered. It looks like I have number 7.
Yeah, you have the number. Everybody who orders a book gets the number that they bought it at. So you ordered 7.
6 people bought it before me.
Yes.
Look at that, proof of work.
Exactly.
I have, and you actually listed in here, I guess, at time of at a time of production, the six people that beat me was Tweetius, Dozer, Kyle, Man Like Quex, Tatum Turned Up, and Kieran. I beat everybody else.
Yeah, you beat all the 100 and, I don't know, 10 other people.
But it's interesting, right? Because it's a combination of physical and collectible, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is an interesting concept.
I think, you know, I had like my reasons for publishing a book. And one of the reasons was a very selfish reason. I just really like artist books. I like these self-published books, the self-published zines, the like the punk rock flyers, which like I think I explained that earlier, that I think Bitcoin is also punk rock, and I think self-publishing is that as well. You know, it's like this counterculture movement almost, going outside of the beaten tracks that, you know, are already there. Nobody can stop you making a zine, a flyer, a book. You can just make stuff, which I think is really, really cool. And a lot of times these artist books and these self-published publications are about very niche subjects as well. And I think like we're all way down in this rabbit hole that is Bitcoin and decentralized protocols and open networks. And I think we're way, way further down than we sometimes realize that we are. So I guess if somebody sees the No Good book, then they'll be like, what's this about? And I think that's really cool. So yeah, in short, I just really want to make a book. And it's actually good because it takes so long. I learned that it takes so long to make a book. This book took 2 years. I think I posted the announcement that I was going to make a book in September 2024 or October 2024. So it's almost 2 years. So you better have a passion for it and you better want to make it. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. Another reason I wanted to make the book is, you know, when I started No Good, I was interested in Bitcoin, and slowly this world of the open web opened up to me. I slowly learned about like what open source software is, what open protocols are, what self-hosting is, how to run a node. I became much more aware of online privacy or digital privacy. Bitcoin sparked all of that for me. And automatically, the world of, let's say, closed platforms and walled gardens started to close for me. Like I deleted my Instagram account and my Twitter account. And so this book is like an antidote to the social media algorithms, to endlessly posting your work into the void that is social media, I would say. You know, a lot of the work is digital these days, and people just post it to some social media platform, and then they, like, it disappears. It's so fast. It's so fleeting, all those posts, that I wanted to make something that stays, you know, that has staying power, that has real physical weight to it. I read this really cool blog while I was making the book. It was called Make Something Heavy. It's on workingtheories.com. And there she writes, and there's this quote, and I actually have it written down because I think about it a lot. And the quote is, so many creators start in the shallow pool of some algorithm's grip until inevitably they go searching for something heavier. And she argues that this whole world of social media is so fleeting and so, yeah, it doesn't weigh anything. It just, everything you post just blows away and disappears in the giant cesspool of posts and online stuff. And so I wanted to make something heavy as well, you know, and I think heavy things are, it's Citadel Dispatch, I think, is a heavy thing. It's like a personal website, a movie, like a body of work, you know, and that's what I wanted to make. And I thought a book was a really good example of that.
Yeah, it feels very different than, you know, like the physical framed prints on the wall.
Yeah.
I know it's hard for me to place it because, I mean, I have those too.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said earlier in the episode, you know, Bitcoin Park's walls are filled with your art and Madex's art. But having the actual book, it feels fundamentally different.
Yeah, creating it feels fundamentally different.
Right.
You know, before I started No Good, I also didn't have like a body of work that I could put into a book, because like I said, all my work was spread out as far as subjects go. And now I have this coherent subject and coherent, subject basically in all of my drawings. So it also provides, it all of a sudden I have the option to make like a collected work. And I think that's very different than prints.
Yeah, it's weird because there's obviously overlap, right? Which is that something framed on my wall is, authentic and physical and limited edition. So there's clear overlap there.
Mm.
But it's also fundamentally different, which is just an interesting, which I didn't necessarily appreciate until the book arrived. Because I think I ordered it like 2 years ago.
Yeah, you did. Like you were number 7.
I just wanted to support you.
Like a couple days after. No, but, a book also gives more space to explain yourself a little bit. So the first part of the book is background. And that's just like basically the story that I told at the beginning of the podcast, written down, by the way. The book is self-published and that means I did everything myself. So I designed it myself, came up with the concept of the book, contacted the printer. I paid for everything myself. I ship everything myself from the studio. So, if you order a book, then it comes from my studio and I carefully packaged it. But the only thing I didn't do myself is writing the book because I cannot write at all. So I had a friend of mine, Daniel, shout out to him, write it for me. I gave him all these clunky drafts and things I wanted to say. And he wrote, I think he's just a natural talent at translating that, using, his way with words to make that way more interesting than and way more fun to read than I could ever do it myself. But yeah, there's a book has space for that. And I also knew from the beginning, when I started 2 years ago, that I wanted to not just show the work, not just have it to be like have it be a portfolio piece, but also to give some context about this weird world that I'm currently in, that I'm focusing on. And I think I asked you as well if you wanted to write something for the book, because at the end of the book, there's this, it's called the context section. And I wanted to just have articles in there about things that I find important, but that I cannot write myself because I cannot actually write, And I actually started out.
I said yes and then never followed through, right?
True. And I totally understand that because, I know now that asking somebody to write something for you without anything in return, basically.
Is I see Sean Yeager wrote ask. Something.
Yes. But, I at some point I stopped asking people to write something for me and I just looked at existing material and asked people if I could use their words in the book, like to reprint them in the book. And I said, hey, if you let me reprint it, I will also illustrate your blog post or your article. So I spent a lot of time finding articles and asking people if I could use it and then trying to make a coherent story out of all the articles so that there's like a beginning and an end to it, even though every article is, was made on its own. And then I spent several months making all kinds of illustrations for it. So I just like making things very complex.
Yeah, I'm glad we actually brought that up because when you reached out to confirm my address and you said that you're finally shipping the books, one of the first things I said to my wife was just like, oh, no good reached out today. And I realized I completely fucked up and told him I was going to write something and I didn't follow through.
Yeah, I know. But, like I said, I realized that asking people to write something is it's a big ask, And
Also, I'm not a natural writer, to be honest, but
I think I actually saw you. You had some posts, maybe on Noster even, about, I don't remember what about anymore, but
what, long form posts?
Yeah.
Well, that was because I was trying to make long form Noster a thing, so I forced myself to write long form.
I've done that as well.
We were like, it's been better than anyone else, but it's been a fucking grind on the Noster side. I think it's easy to, I think there's a lot of good reasons to critique centralized social media platforms, but being involved in trying to build in open identity and social protocol from scratch, you really realize like how much more work it is than I think people appreciate. And so the other piece, I mean, as someone who has two shows and has gone on thousands of hours of other people's shows, live streaming functionality was really key to me on Noster and finding a replacement for Twitch and YouTube. And we had, you know, in this show, for instance, was, you know, Noster only live stream for years, almost 2 years, I think, to the point where it didn't even move to another platform. I stopped live streaming. Now it's just audio only. I posted to podcast feeds immediately following. And I did feel a little bit bad because I was like, I'm supposed to be bootstrapping this live stream thing. But anyway, I digress.
Why did you stop the live stream?
First of all, I think the overwhelming majority of listeners listen via audio only. They don't actually watch any videos. I think doing audio only makes a better conversation because, for instance, right now, you wouldn't be on video. Me and you can see each other. But that wouldn't be the case if we were live because you wouldn't want to dox your face, which has happened many times with many of the conversations. Those are a lot of times the conversations I like to have. I feel way more comfortable without a 4K camera in front of my face. So I'm more natural on my side. The audio quality is strictly better because we're not dealing with broadcasting it out at the same time. And it made the lift easier. It made the lift easier for me in terms of shipping the show. And it meant I was getting a little bit burnt out, but I wanted it to continue. Okay. So those are all the reasons. I think it's been great, to be honest. I still do Rabbit Hole Recap live every week, right? My other show, live 4K video, live chat. And I find myself enjoying Civil Dispatches more because it feels more freeing. It feels more natural. And one of the reasons our show and a bunch of other shows moved to video, whether we admitted it at the time or not, was it's like the engagement incentive. And it's not because of people watching the show with video. It's because clips only do well on social media. Yeah. If the 2 minute clip has a video of people's faces. So it's all about the clips.
I remember.
Honestly, I've done the exact opposite with my life over the last 2-3 years, which is I punish myself on engagement. Like I'm not looking. You got to put in a little bit of effort if you want to interact with Dispatch, if you want to interact with Rabbit Hole Recap, and that's fine by me. Like I don't have any desire to be an influencer. I kind of just ended up in that role to a degree. So that's how I think about it.
I totally agree as well because. Like, I remember when Instagram introduced Reels, and all of a sudden, if you wanted to, you know, get more reach on Instagram, you had to make Reels. They just decided that. And they could because it's their platform, so they can just do whatever they want. And then, you know, I share my studio with two other people, and they're all creatives. And all of a sudden, we were making Reels. And we were like, oh, yeah, you got to make a Reel. Like, if you made it work, you got to make a video of yourself working and then edit that and then post that. And otherwise, nothing's going to happen with your Instagram account. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, the platform that you use to share your media on, like, shapes your work. It shapes how you post it. And I hate that because, you know, sometimes I want to... Like sometimes I want to write long form and sometimes I want to live stream and sometimes I want to, I don't know, make like a tweet or like a Noster note, small, short note. And you cannot do that on legacy social media. And what I think is really, really cool about Noster and, you know, maybe we're not there yet and maybe it's not. Maybe other people don't care, but what I think is really cool is that all of that stuff is like collected under the one account, your one NPOP.
Right.
And I remember going to Nostrudel at some point and another client. And on your profile, there's like these little tabs. And one tab reads, like you're on the profile, so you already know who you're looking at. And then one tab reads, here's the torrent files this user has published with their private key, basically. And here's the long form. Here's the blogs. Here's the short notes. Here's the images. And it was just that's what I really love about Nostr, that I can choose how to share my work under one account. And I think that's really, really, really amazing.
Or even, and then you can make infinite accounts at will too, right? Like you
sure.
can have
yeah. Yeah.
No permission required. You can have multiple identities, multiple ways of expressing yourself to the world, and user has complete control over that. But exactly, where I was going with that tangent to begin with is bootstrapping a novel open live streaming protocol is no small feat. In early days in the trenches, it was my two shows and your 24/7 365 music broadcast that's still going on. It's going on. I just checked zap.stream. You can check in any Nostr app that supports live video, which there's a bunch now that do. It's going right now. What is the origin story of that?
The origin story of that is that I never, ever, ever thought I was going to make a 24/7 live stream. That wasn't planned. I was just at some point drawing something for myself. I had some time. And I was drawing this desk with computers on it. And I thought, okay, this is an interesting sketch. I can move forward with this. And wouldn't it be fun if all the computers had screens that all like blinked and showed interfaces and stuff's happening on the screens? And that was a fun idea. And then I think literally everything is like hand animated in that, like almost everything is drawn frame by frame in the, in the background of the radio station. I think it's like 2,600 layers or something like that.
That's wild.
It became so complex. I think it took a month and a half to finish that animation. And while I was doing it, I was having like lots of fun because I just thought it was really cool to do. I was like, I'm not doing this kind of work and then just showing it to people on Nostr and then never use it again. So I need this to be a thing somehow. And so while I was working on it, I thought, it could be, could work as a background of one of those 24/7 lo-fi hip hop radio stations. And then I started like thinking about that and how do you run a radio station? How do you keep it running for 24/7? Like, do you need a computer for it? Do you need a server somewhere? And at some point I just bought a Mac Mini, which were like a couple hundred bucks at the time. They weren't as expensive as they are now. And I just set it up and I made a playlist and I just decided to run it. And at first it was on YouTube because there was no Nostr live streaming yet, but I think it was only there for 3 months. And then I looked at what you need to do to like generate income at YouTube. And it was like, you need 10,000, like 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers, I don't know, 5,000 followers. And you need like this many hours of people watching. And there was all these hoops that you had to
go
through.
It's super predatory. And the worst one is you have to basically opt into their own ads too.
Yes.
So then your listeners are getting fed like absolute slop ads from YouTube.
Yeah. And you can like only play music that's allowed, basically. So you're pretty limited there as well. And then I think Kieran made ZapStream a couple months later. And I was like, I'm just going to move it because YouTube is like not working at all. And I moved it, I think, like within a week that ZapStream was launched, or maybe 2 weeks. I don't remember exactly. And it's just been going on forever and ever since then. And I updated the animation a couple times. Probably 3 years, I think. Like 2023.
Yeah, I guess it looks like the last time you had technical difficulties was like a year ago or something, right?
Yeah, actually, I think that was the end event, the Nostr event that was connected to the start of the live stream. It got updated, or it got a new end event, and so it just calculates from that moment on. But it was like, it says 18 months, I think, online now, but it's actually way longer because it's just the end event got created, a new end event got created there. So it's
awesome.
Been like 3 years, yeah. And I'm just leaving it running. And what's actually really cool is that now, because it's a Nostr live stream, I can on my website, I can also show the live stream and I can also show the chat and I can show the recent apps. I can put it on the broadcast itself, but I can also take that out and just put it anywhere on my site. So,
oh, it looks great on your site. Nogood.studio/radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it looks like I've never seen it in this view. This is an awesome view with your ticker.
Yeah. And you can basically only do that because of Noster. You know, if it was like a YouTube thing, I couldn't. Maybe you can, but I wouldn't know how. I cannot show you who zapped recently or what the top 10 largest zaps are or who just zapped my profile in general, you know? The Noster enables all that kind of stuff, and I like...
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
...integrating it.
And it knew that I had my Noster extension enabled, so that when I click zap, it automatically...
Yeah.
Gives me my social signal on the zap.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like I said, that's what I love about Noster. It's this interoperability, I guess, and that it's open and I can, you know, that's also with AI, by the way. I had all these ideas to do this, but I could never, ever, ever do it.
Dude, AI web creation, especially on top of open protocols, is fucking awesome.
It's amazing. It's so much fun. And so I actually just, today or yesterday, I set up, you know, Obsidian, the note-taking app?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So I set it up that if I take a web clipping using the Obsidian Clipper, that if I clip anything, a website or video, it grabs that note and publishes it to my site immediately as a clipping. And so I can make this feed of just things I find online that I think are very interesting. So if you go to, on my website, there's a page called the Archive, and you can also go to the Now page.
Yeah.
On the right, there's just clippings. And it's just all kinds of stuff that I found that...
That's awesome.
I think are really cool. And it's just all automated, and I don't have to do anything. And I just have to clip something. Yeah, I love building those. Like when I'm not drawing, or when I'm tired of drawing, which happens a lot, sometimes I don't draw for like 2 months or 3 months. And then I just like tinkering with this kind of stuff, building things. And you know, I'm not saying I'm a developer at all, but I like to just mess around with it.
No, that's really cool. By the way, you have to tell your clanker, when I zap through nogood.studio/radio, it should give me the option to put a custom message.
Yeah, good one. I will write it down.
Yeah, obviously, if I did it through Primal or Wisp or Zap.stream, I could have put a message.
Sir, that's also a huge step.
Well, insane. I wanted to be the top.
Yeah, I think you'll be at the top. Yeah, there you are. You're going to be at the top for a long time.
It wasn't a coincidence. But I mean, just for the freaks, like I went to nogood.studio/radio. It automatically recognized my NOAS 2x extension. So it knew, it asked for authorization to know my public key, so my Noster profile. And then it asked me to put in the amount. I put in the amount and it just showed a QR code. And then I just scanned it from Phoenix Wallet, just sent Freedom Money. Boom, done. There's multiple different pieces there that all come together.
Yeah. And I think
Freedom,
if you have
tech stack, it's just beautiful to actually like feel in person.
It's so cool. I love it. And I think if you have like an LB plugin, then it will recognize that as well. So then you don't have to scan the QR code. Yeah. And
that's
like
awesome.
Another thing I thought was really fun is that if somebody buys a book, then that will show up on stream as well. It will say, hey, someone bought a book, and then
that's
a little picture
cool.
of the book. And how many books are left, for example. So
how many books are left?
It's a limited run of 400 books, and I think there are something like 240 books left. So I sold about 160.
And how much are they?
There are 70 euros.
Well worth it,
which
freaks.
Don't ask me how much it is in dollars, though. I don't know.
No, I mean, you only accept Bitcoin, right?
I used to, but these days there's also just a regular payment option as well. But I always want to have the Bitcoin option.
No. I think I paid in Bitcoin. Was the crowdfund was Bitcoin only, right?
Yes. So because self-publishing, you know, you have to do everything yourself. You have to pay everything yourself. And self-publishing a book gets expensive really quick. I did a crowdfunding option. And that's also something I think is actually amazing, that, you know, how many people in the world know how to actually pay with Bitcoin, like buy something with Bitcoin.
Not many people.
Not that many, right?
There are a few of us, yeah.
Yeah. And so even then, there's enough people who know how that works. Even though I totally limited my reach by, you know, deleting all my social media and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. And but there's still, it still happens, you know. There are still plenty of people who pre-ordered the book, paid with Bitcoin, and actually funded the product, like I think like 70% of the production.
That's awesome.
Which was the reason for the crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah, it was just purely ride or die funded.
Exactly. And I thought, like, if I sell 20 pre-orders, then I'm going to be so happy. Or if I sell 30. And if I sell 60, that's insane. And then we sold 90, 95, or I don't know, 100.
That's awesome.
Like that. Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
Well, anyway, freaks, go pick up your limited edition. Nogood.studio/shop.
Yeah.
It looks like where it
You'll
is.
You'll find it on the site. It's everywhere.
Pretty cool. I had another question for you.
Sure.
No, I don't remember it though. That's the issue. yeah, I mean, the stream. Oh, this. It wasn't actually a question. It was just a shout out. We have. You've never been to Bitcoin Park, right?
No.
We have TVs everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We got the building. The previous tenant of the building was this pop country band, and they had TV screens everywhere on a bunch of different walls. And oftentimes when you walk into Bitcoin Park, Nogood radio is on just 24/7, just showing on at least one of the TVs. And people are always asking, they're like, what's going on here? Like, what is this? And I mean, the art is, I think, very provocative in a good way. And then the zaps, like showing the zaps on stream is just such a good example of it's such a real example of the power of freedom money, that it's a lot of times it's been people's first touch point, right? Like, it's in a lot of ways, these Bitcoin physical spaces are almost like embassies to normies, right? We have people come in, they've never really experienced it. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, this radio station being run by an anon that's accepting Bitcoin payments. That is really cool art in the background is a fun first touch point for people.
Yeah, definitely. And I kind of like, you know, just using all this stuff and putting it on my site and putting it in all my work. And then not explaining what it is, you know, if you know, you know. If you know what all those little stickers on my character's clothes mean and the patches, then you know. And if you don't, you don't. But I hope it could still just be a cool visual, and that you could still, you know, even without all the background, you can still think it's a cool piece of work.
How do you source the music for it?
That's
what's
secret.
The deal with that? But is it? I mean, it has to be. It has to be like copyright. You're not paying for licenses, right?
No.
Okay. No. I want to ask you to divulge the secret. I mean, you're not the first one to create a lo-fi radio station. It's like it's a thing on YouTube.
Yes.
There's like a bunch of channels on YouTube that does this type of thing.
Yeah. And on YouTube, like, they will kick you off and they will disable your account if you do that.
You have a little bit more leeway on Noster.
I can just do whatever I want. And, you know, I know, I'm well aware that it's not the coolest thing to do, you know?
If Kanye comes on out of nowhere, unless he noticed, you'll probably be fine. If that happens on YouTube, you're immediately suspended.
I'm immediately
all
gone.
Monetization ceased.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, actually, if Nogood Radio ever somehow becomes this huge radio station, I'll just have to turn it off, I'm afraid. You know, it's only works if it's like super small, five listeners.
Fair enough.
Which is fine. It's fine. I want to say something, but now I'm forgetting. Yeah, I don't remember. Something about
Nogood Radio, people experiencing it for the first time at Bitcoin Park. Power.
Yeah, and just
money.
not explaining it. No, oh, that's what it was. Like, not explaining what it all means, but just showing it. And so maybe if you see like zaps showing up on the radio, you go like, hey, what's a zap? What are sats? You know, I've never heard of this, but it's somehow, it looks kind of cool and it appears to be working. So I hope when people like what they see, they'll go find out themselves. I'm not going
to
explain
it. Yeah, the mystery adds to it. It like makes it a cooler first touch.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, when I started No Good, it was all Bitcoin focused. And I had like a lot of, you know, the first projects I did were all Bitcoin projects. They were Bitcoin brands and Bitcoin events. And that was a lot of fun and it was great. And it still is great. But slowly, like, my interests have started to expand. Like, it's not just Bitcoin for me anymore. It's also like a lot of retro tech. And there's other, I'm blanking on other stuff, but there's so much other stuff that I learned, privacy and.
I mean, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And
Bitcoin
is
our money.
Cool.
It's not an end all be all.
No. And for me, it was just the first entry into this open source, open web world, you know? But what's kind of funny is that last year, I got this request from Red Bull if they want to do a project with me. And so I got an email. I was like, oh, they probably want some, like, they want my old work, the work that I made before I started No Good. And in an email, they usually send references of things they like that you've done, that they like the style that they're going for. And it was just all No Good work. And I was like, wow, that's so cool, because Red Bull is one of those companies I would actually really like to work for. And I think it was a really good match because they were doing this retro gaming magazine called Game Pop. And I don't know, retro gaming is a perfect fit for me and for the work I made. I mean, it's not Bitcoin and it's not open source and open web, but it still fits really well. And so slowly I've been getting projects and requests of brands that I never thought would, you know, want to work with me. Brands that used to work with me before I started No Good. You know, I had like lots of different clients and I didn't expect those same kind of clients to want to work with me for this, you know, in this style, in this kind of work. And that I think that's amazing, because I'm doing a project now that I can't really talk about what it is, but it's a really fun project. And I asked them, like, okay, you want this No Good illustrations. Do you also want, you know, the same kind of stickers and patches on the characters that we're going to draw? Is that okay? Because if you want to be part of this little universe, then that's part of it. And they said, yeah, go ahead, you know, draw your weird stickers that nobody really, really gets and put them on the characters, and also put some of our stickers on there, and then we're good to go. So yeah,
stickers that came in the book are awesome. Everyone sends stickers nowadays, and most of the time I have a drawer that my kids can get into that is just like the sticker drawer, but not your stickers. Your stickers, I haven't opened the package. They're separately sealed.
The drawer above.
These are my stickers. I don't know. Yeah. It's funny. It's like you finally get stickers that if you really like them, but then you don't want to use them because then it essentially adds an expiration date to them if you stick it onto something and then that thing dies.
Yeah, they're pretty useless now. Huh?
Yeah. So now they're just, they're sitting. I have a couple shelves that my kids can't reach. And it's not
exactly.
Shelves. Along with the book, by the way. Like I obviously don't trust them with the book, but stickers are usually a different piece. When you said that was Red Bull, the energy drink company, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's such an interesting brand because, well, first of all, I feel like you could do really good work for them. There's a lot of alignment there. But it's interesting because it's one of those brands that I fucking love, but I don't, like their actual main product, I consumed it when I was younger, but I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have any affinity for the actual product. But the brand is so cool. They've done such a good job with that brand.
They do so
extreme
much stuff,
sports,
you know?
And racing and
soccer.
And
they do so many things. And like, I didn't even know they were doing magazines as well.
Right. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, but I just didn't know. And I know I also don't drink the energy drink, but I still love the brand. And what was really cool is that they made a special edition of the magazine where you could play on the cover, which is just a normal magazine soft cover. you can play Tetris on it digitally. Like there's a screen in the...
That's cool.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's in the deluxe edition, I would say. But yeah, that was just a lot of fun. And it just matched so well with the retro gaming. And it was about chiptunes, I think, which was like in the 90s, you had to make video game music, but you only had, I don't know, 2 bytes of data to put that music into. And it was insanely hard. And but there's like this whole, there's this whole scene of people still loving like the old, I don't know, Atari games and the music that was on, you know, in the background. And there's this whole scene that collects that music and still loves it. And if you go search for it, there's, it's like Bitcoin. There's this entire community around it that you never heard of.
Love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Thomas, this is awesome. It's been a long time coming. It's been great to have you on the show and shoot the shit.
Yeah.
I really appreciate all your work. Do you have any final thoughts for the freaks before we wrap?
I would say just keep making awesome stuff. I love, you know, you don't know how much I love all the options that I have with Nostr right now to implement it to my site, to try out all the different clients that all do different things. It reminds me of when the internet just started, you know, early 2000s, late 90s, I guess, when everything was still very experimental. There was no, like, there were no templates. There were no design templates. Everybody did weird shit. And I think Nostr is there right now. And, you know, keep Nostr weird, I would say, and keep building. And yeah, that's it.
Love it. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing too. I love...
Yeah, I will.
I love your style. I love your vibe. Freaks, I hope you found this conversation as interesting as I did. Go support him. Nogood.studio. Get a book before they're sold out. You won't regret it. They're fucking awesome. Next week, I have a show lined up with Matthew Vuk or Vuk. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He's with Second, so... they have one of the ARC implementations, one of the two ARC implementations. If you remember, I had Alex B on. He's with Arcade, so that's the other ARC implementation. So that should be a fascinating conversation. We'll dive deep into the tech. Obviously, last week we had Seth on, and they're building on Spark, which is another, you know, alternative implementation of a Bitcoin payment stack. I think ARC is pretty fascinating. So that'll be fun. And then after that, we're going to change it up again. The week after that, I'm going to have Soap Miner on, the legend himself, cleaning us all, making his soap. So I hope you just appreciate all the different trajectories I'm going on with the show right now. You know, I'm out here raising a strong family, building businesses, operating multiple nonprofits. And we're not beholden to sponsors at Dispatch. So we can just kind of go with the flow. Trying to keep it high signal, trying to keep it interesting. So give me your feedback. Feedback is appreciated. Support the show with sats. It really does mean a lot. Every sat matters. Share with your friends and family. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, man.
Thank you all. Stay humble, stack sats. Peace.